their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And Happy New Year, right? We made it.
Absolutely.
It's the calendar flipped and it says January.
Yeah, so, and we had a really nice video conference thing with a bunch of our listeners on New Year's Eve. That was fun.
Yeah, big shout out to everybody who attended that. That was really great. And we did trivia and we had a fun time. I think it was pretty cool.
I kind of like that. Yeah, it was. I'm pretty sure I came up with some extremely geeky ones, but that's to be expected.
Well, it's all good.
It was fun.
I saw something that I had to share, which was just, I was really dreading to wake up on New Year's Day and discover that the calendar simply said December 32nd.
A bit of a Groundhog Day thing.
Yeah, but it's January. We've made it. Hopefully you guys are out there are doing well as well. So what we thought we'd do today is we were thinking about, you know, we've done a lot of technical stuff, but it's a new year. We were thinking about New Year's resolutions. And to that, we started thinking about maybe inspiration and trying to get some inspiration for the coming year. Because, you know, we know it's not easy right now to get out and maybe go to the places that we want to do or do the kind of photography that we want, just because we're all still in this state of, trying to stay healthy and safe. So, we dug out some, we were looking through and trying to get some inspiration from famous photographers and quotes and stuff, not just from their work, but from stuff they've said about photography. So we thought we would discuss some inspirational quotes or things that we think are worthy of discussing and make you think a little bit, right?
Yeah, we did a little bit of that on the video conference. And one of the things that we concluded just in the prep time was, might be kind of fun to do it in the podcast too. So that's what we've done. And for this one, in addition to some quotes we had shared with the people on the video conference, you found some on a page from photographylife.com, right? A collection of quotes. So just a little shout out for them putting some of these together, made it our lives very easy.
It's an array of different things. And you know, with all, one of the things you learn is that there's photographers who you aspire to emulate their style and their subject matter. And then there's ones where you look at the quote and you go, well, that doesn't really apply to what I do, but maybe in the context of what their photography is, it makes more sense. And some of the quotes are simply inspirational and some of the quotes are more like, here's some good advice, right? And so we've got a little bit of both of those. So where do we want to start, Rick?
Well, I think let's just kind of go back and forth with each one of us reading in one, and then we can talk a little bit about it. And I'm happy to start off with one. And, Ansel Adams had a lot of great quotes.
Sure, absolutely.
So this is one of his. There are always two people in every photograph, the photographer and the viewer.
Yeah.
I think about that. That's a fantastic one.
Right. I think it's very easy to lose sight of the individuals who will be looking at your photograph. That your photographer, well, that also you, the photographer is part of the photograph as well. But the person looking at it, you know, you don't just take the photograph to just be locked away in a lockbox somewhere. Presumably it only works when someone's looking at it as well, right?
Well, you know, I think it can go both ways. I think it can both go both ways. Because, you know, in my case, there are certainly photographs that I take that I like that I actually never show anyone.
Well, but you're still the viewer of them. But somebody has to look at them.
That is a good point.
I mean, the photograph does not exist in a vacuum. Somebody has to look at it.
No, it doesn't.
So even if you're the viewer.
But I think there's a lot you can tell about someone by the photographs that they take, especially when you look at them over a period of time. You can tell a lot about their mood, you know, just by, you know, are the photographs light and colorful? Are they dark and somber? Is there a sudden change in style all of a sudden? That can tell you a lot about someone's psyche and what's going on. And then similarly, how someone interprets some other photograph can be really interesting. What do they read into it? You know, that may have never been present in the photographer's mind, but that doesn't matter. It's just, it's like literature. It's an interesting process.
Yeah, and one of the things that just popped into my head was consider, for example, something we've talked about in the past, but in Ansel's time, you had to make each photograph from the negative. You had to physically produce each print. It's not like you could just post. So he literally had to post-process the same image dozens of times, or however many prints that he would make of something. And for some of his more famous photos, Moonrise being probably the big one, you know, if you look at his prints, or not just on that one, if you look at his prints later in his life from when he first started, there's a difference. There's a difference in mood. They get darker. There's different, you know, there's just he played with things. And that's a good thing.
It wasn't just to be random. It was his mood at the time, right?
Exactly. So let's just stick with Ansel again, because we have another one of his quotes. I'll just throw it out as long as we're there, because, you know, we both like him a lot. And this is a good one, which is he was quoted as saying, "There are no rules for good photographs. There are only good photographs." That's one of those ones that is so, you know, it's true, but I think it speaks to the completely objective nature of like what makes a good photo. You can try to bottle that up and come up with a set of rules, but it's almost like post hoc. If someone says you have to put your subject here on the frame and you have to do this, and, you know, there's obviously things that are going to change, and there's things that you can do to be better. When we were talking about composition a couple of weeks ago, we talked about some of those things, but I think eventually it becomes this act of learning how to see things through the viewfinder in a way that comes naturally to you, that produces this good image. Because it's like when you see a good one, it just sticks out, and you might be able to say, "Oh, it's because you did," but it's not. I mean, it's a good photo. And
yeah, the one of the ways I would describe it, and I'm really thinking about the composition tips that we gave people, which are good ones, but to me, those are how you go from bad photography to, you know, at least mediocre. They're not how you get to great. And how you get to great, there's such an enormous range of things that are so different and potentially completely rule breaking. You know, like a lot of photographers who are quite famous now, you know, produced photos that people hated originally, just hated. And, you know, one that you and I were talking about before is guy named William Eggleston. And I can remember the first time I saw his shots, you know, they were made with color print film. They had an initial quality when you looked at them of just almost like random snapshots.
Like if you handed your camera back in the 60s or early 70s to an 8-year-old and just said, take pictures of things, see what you get. It's almost what it looks like.
Yeah. I remember taking photos in.
Well, sure.
But yeah, but his ended up stretching the genre of photography and created, you know, quote, new rules for good photographs in some cases. And there are some people that would probably say that they were never good photographs, but I kind of like him. But the really great ones often break rules.
Well, I'll just go back to the Ansel thing for a minute. I mean, you can set up at the same spot that he shot, you know, a Yosemite picture or the Yellowstone, the Tetons stuff. You can set up and take that shot, and it's never going to be his. It's not going to be his shot, because what went into his shot, I mean, even if you take away the composition for a moment, you know, and you have that reasonably done, there are still things that, at least for outdoor photographers, natural landscape photographers, that are going to be beyond your control. There's the light, there's the conditions of the day, there's the shot. I mean, I have photos from Badlands, for example, that beautiful scenery, but they're just boring as hell because we didn't get the right clouds, the right light. So, I mean, I could compose it perfectly, and that does not mean that I'm getting that magical photograph. So things have to go right, including what you do with it afterwards, right? I mean, but I mean, that's there's another one that he said that, or someone else says, you know, you don't take a photograph, you make a photograph. And I don't remember who said that one exactly, but it's along those lines. We've talked about that in the past. So I just think those are good things to think about. It's not that you shouldn't know rules, it's or know what the good things are to do that puts you in the right neighborhood, but you still got to have things line up for you.
Yeah. Here's a good one, I think, and this is primarily focused on people photography, but not exclusively, and it's from Nan Golden. But I think it's pretty deep. I used to think that I could never lose anyone if I photographed them enough. In fact, my pictures show me how much I've lost. It's like, wow.
That's heavy, man.
Oh my gosh. Lots of impact. But it's a good reminder about the power of photography.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also a reminder that, especially when it comes to people, don't be shy about taking a variety of photos in different circumstances, even ones that seem dumb. Sometimes they take on huge meaning many years later when those people are gone for whatever reason. It can be enormous.
I wish I had more. I was going to say, you know, my son was sometimes very reluctant to be in photos. And it's like, you know, I don't want these pictures. And I would explain to him, it's like, well, these are for me to remember you by, you know, when you were little or whatever. And that's true. But, you know, they're also for him. He doesn't know it right now.
No.
But at some point, I want him to be able to look back on that and say, wow, there's me and my dad, or there's me when I was little. There's just, you know, and just and have those available. And you might not realize it today or tomorrow, but someday it could be pretty, pretty important.
Absolutely.
One project that I recently did actually for fun was I just pulled a whole bunch of photos together of me and him and various members of our family going back several years, you know, going back many years, you know, trips here and that and just everything. And I put them all together into one of those photo collage arrangements and had it printed on metal. And it's just hanging in the living room right now where, you know, and so when he comes over, he can just, you know, cause someday he's going to look at that and so, oh wait, there's me and my uncle or my great grandmother or, you know, or my aunt or, and there we were doing things and that was, you know, it's just there as a reminder.
Yeah.
So it's cool stuff.
Yeah. Okay. You want to pick the next one?
Yeah. You know, and to go with the deep ones here, I think, so here's an interesting person you wouldn't have expected as a photographer necessarily, and that's Brigitte Bardot. And she had a quote that I really like. I think it goes along with this philosophical theme we've struck upon, which is, a photograph can be an instant of life captured for eternity that will never cease looking back at you. And it's like making you think, right? You're looking at this thing and it's looking at you. That instant is gone, but there it is for all eternity.
Forever. Yeah.
Right. It's captured. It's, I think that that's kind of profound.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, not very long ago, I was going through some old photos that I had made in high school. And in some cases, I had the negatives. So I, you know, I think I used that new little Nikon tool where you can hook it up to a 60 millimeter macro lens and
Oh,
take the shot,
the film
do it with
scan.
your DSLR or whatever. But with some, I didn't have the negatives, and I was just taking phone, you know, copies of them with my phone, which actually worked just fine.
Yeah.
But it was amazing to see some of those old photos, including people that I had not seen for many decades, you know, former girlfriends, whatever. And it, those photos just had so much meaning. But, you know, definitely that portion of an instant looking back at you for eternity, that one really resonates mm-hmm. with me just from having gone through those images. It was fun.
I think there's an interesting
meaningful too.
I think there's an interesting thing as the person taking photos. So for example, I took sports photos for the high school yearbook back in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. And I'll go back and, you know, I don't have any of those pictures. It was all black and white. It was all black and white negative. Some of them got into the yearbook, obviously, and others don't. But I'll look back and, you know, I'll see the photos of the basketball game that I went to. And, you know, it's a guy jump, you know, whatever, he's mm-hmm. taking a shot. But I can remember where I was standing when I was taking, you know, I remember the atmosphere, being in the gym, being down there on the court, being the person taking those photos. It has a different, you know, it mm-hmm. it jostles a different memory. You know, and then I look at the baseball pictures, which frankly we staged mm-hmm. because baseball season hadn't started before we went to deadline. So yeah. There's photos of some of these guys and, you know, it's like, oh yeah, look like you're throwing the baseball, right? And it's just, right. We just did them. But it was great. You know, it's like, I knew that, but they didn't. So it is a thing. It evokes a memory for everyone. I think the people who were in that photo would probably think about it differently because they were there when the photo was taken versus the people who were looking at it just as other students in the yearbook and they didn't know any backstory or whatever. And, you know, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
All
right. One last one. Mm-hmm. And this will be kind of short. And then we'll talk a little bit about our own resolutions, partially based off of things that we've talked about. This is a really simple one that you spotted from Joe McNally.
Oh, yeah.
Our good friend. Had on our podcast a long time ago. Don't pack up your camera until you've left the location.
Yeah,
so
right.
Simple and so smart.
Right.
And how many times have we made that mistake?
I will add a corollary to that as an mm-hmm. outdoor landscape photographer, which is always look behind you.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, a lot of times we'll be set up on some ridge somewhere, you know, some great overlook. We're waiting for the perfect light and you look behind you and there's clouds are doing something absolutely spectacular. You didn't even realize, you know, everybody turns around, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's a good one. You know, that's just a solid piece of advice. And I think
the pilot version of that one is check six.
Right. Exactly. Always check your six. And you know, and we're going to get into our resolutions, but there's a quote from Imogen Cunningham that I wanted to just throw out because it'll lead me into kind of what I'm thinking about. It's like, and her quote was, "Which of my photographs is my favorite? The one I'm going to take tomorrow."
Ooh, love that one.
So we've been looking through these quotes. We've been trying to, you know, get a little personal inspiration, and so we need to have some ideas for the coming year, because we both know, I think everybody knows, that this next, at least the next 6 or 8 months are not going to just, you know, we're not going any trips or doing anything major and we have to, and it's winter and what are you going to do? So what, from reading through all these, you know, what sort of inspiration do we draw from this and what are we going to try to do in the new year to do something? I have some ideas for me. What about you, Rick?
Well, there's the one resolution I make every single year and then fail every year. And I've been doing it probably at least 20 years now. It has to do with this. This is a straightforward one. It's use more artificial light in my photos.
Oh, Right.
get out the flash more than I do. And I just hate using those damn things and getting them set up at times. So I need to do that and just try to break through that barrier one more time.
Right.
But if we're doing this podcast next year and talk about resolutions, I'll probably bring up that same one.
Right. Resolutions mean a different thing in this context. Usually we're talking about megapixels.
So it's yeah, true.
It's all good. More resolutions, right? You know, I was just thinking about stuff. I mean, one thing that I always try to do, and I, you know, as with you, I kind of get lazy on it. And this is just a technical thing, which is, this is a great time of year if the weather is crummy to sit inside and go through your old photos, prune out things from your catalog that don't need to be there, streamline it, and keywording. I'm so bad at remembering to do keywording a lot of times that I need to you know, get on it. I mean, for me, I'm able to find things pretty easily. That's probably why I don't always do it, but I ought to just do some more things, especially keywording shots that have family or people in them, so you can go back and find those photos of your friends and family. But that's just a technical thing. But on a more philosophical thing, you know, going back to the, you know, my favorite photograph is the one I haven't even created yet. You know, reading through these quotes and looking up some of these famous photographers and seeing what they did, particularly Eggleston, makes you realize that a lot of times we gravitate towards a person, a particular photographer's style, because we want to emulate that. And that's a perfectly valid thing to do. I mean, I think it's something we ought to do. I mean, you as a, you know, bringing up artificial light, I mean, where do you get inspiration? Go look at what Joe McNally's doing. Go look at what some of the, you know, what Dave Black is doing. Go look at some of those things, because those guys are absolutely masters of artificial light, of, you know, even in simple in simple things. You know, I looked at Eggleston's photos and thought, wow, you know, those are kind of snapshotty, but there's a lot of times when we either individually or even if we're together, we'll just be somewhere and you're not feeling it photographically. And I think the problem for me is that, you know, I gravitated towards the landscape and nature photographers, the Ansel Adams, the John Shaws, the Galen Rowells, you know, those guys, which is a wonderful style, and it's a subject matter that resonates with me. But at a time when I'm not exactly going to be doing a lot of traveling, maybe I need to start getting out and take, not only take more pictures, but take those pictures that are of that different style and look for another photographer. It doesn't have to be Eggleston, but just look through some stuff and see what they are doing. You know, I don't do a lot of street photography. I struggle with that. You know, people photography. So I think this would be a really great opportunity for me, at least, to start thinking about doing stuff in a different way. You know, maybe using some of those new prime lenses that I just collected. You know, so it's like stuff like that, single lens.
Now, I think if you can do things that stretch the boundaries of your own photography, whether or not they end up sticking with you, they do shape things, and I think that's a really helpful thing.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like the rut we create is self-inflicted. When we're in this creative rut or whatever, it's because we're thinking we want every sunrise to be the spectacular sunrise. We want, you know, we want the landscape to be perfect, or we want, you know, no people in the photo, you know, we want it to look pristine, you know, right? That is a construct we've created in our own minds as to what isn't right. So maybe to make things right, you need to look at the scene from a completely different perspective, because a different photographer might come in and say, well, this is a wonderful thing to take, you know, because I'm going to gonna do the, you know, trash on the sidewalk. Okay, good. Let's just, you know.
Right.
So
I think one thing that's in that spirit that you were just talking about is, When you get a little stuck, don't stop. Experiment in weird ways and see what happens.
Absolutely. I mean, that's it's just something that is particularly easy to do as well. It's easy to get stuck, but it's also easy with digital to just keep going and push through it. It's so easy to just get frustrated. So,
yeah, give yourself permission to play.
And as we'll end with a quote, as Henri Cartier-Bresson said, your first 10,000 photographs are your worst. So, yeah. So that means if you're not there yet, you got to keep pushing through.
Exactly. And the part two to that is your next 10,000.
Yeah. Yeah. It might not be great either. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully all of our listeners out there have had a wonderful, safe, happy New Year's. Let's get through this. We can stay safe, stay sane. We'd love to hear more from you over on our Facebook page, facebook.com/imagedoctors. And until next time, happy shooting.
All right. Bye-bye.